from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. I got to tell you, I woke up in that last hour, so I'm good. I did not need any coffee.
You didn't need any coffee?
No, there's just too much news. I got to pay attention.
That's good. Hey, we have a guest at 10:33. Chris Ragdow, the superintendent of public instruction for the state of Washington, will join us and give us some of the key factors in the reasonings for Washington schools reopening. So he will join us at 10:33. But right now, Ursula, the biggest thing is everybody's paying attention right now to is the Derek Chauvin trial.
Yes, absolutely. And the country is bracing for the verdict as the jury continues its second day of deliberations in that case of the former Minneapolis police officer who is facing murder charges. And right now, there is a lot of attention being paid to Democrat Representative Maxine Waters of California. She's getting a lot of heat after she called on protesters last weekend to, quote, get more confrontational if Chauvin is acquitted in the killing of George Floyd. So I want you to listen to what she said.
We're looking for a guilty verdict. We're looking for a guilty verdict, and we're looking to see if all of the talk that took place and has been taking place after they saw what happened to George Floyd, if nothing does not happen, then we know that we've got to not only stay in the street, but we've got to fight for justice. But I am very hopeful, and I hope that we're going to get a verdict that is say guilty, guilty, guilty. And if we don't, we cannot go away.
And not just manslaughter, right? I mean...
Oh, no, not manslaughter. No. This is guilty for murder. I don't know whether it's in the first degree, but as far as I'm concerned, it's first degree.
Congresswoman, what happens if we do not get what you just told? What should the people do? What should protesters on the street do?
I didn't hear you.
What happens?
What should protesters do?
Well, we got to stay on the street, and we've got to get more active. We've got to get more confrontational. We've got to make sure that they know that we mean business.
So now Republicans are preparing to censure her for her remarks. This is House Republican Whip Steve Scalise.
She was trying to incite violence, and in fact, there is violence going on right now in Minnesota because of her actions.
And as you know, G, the judge overseeing the Chauvin trial is now saying that her comments could be grounds for appealing a verdict. Do you want to hear? Here's the judge.
I'm aware that Congresswoman Waters was talking specifically about this trial and about the unacceptability of anything less than a murder conviction and talk about being confrontational. But you can submit the press articles about that. This goes back to what I've been saying from the beginning. I wish elected officials would stop talking about this case, especially in a manner that is disrespectful to the rule of law and to the judicial branch and our function. I think if they want to give their opinions, they should do so in a respectful and in a manner that is consistent with their oath to the Constitution to respect a co-equal branch of government. Their failure to do so, I think, is abhorrent, but I don't think it has prejudiced us with additional material that would prejudice this jury. They have been told not to watch the news. I trust they are following those instructions and that there is not in any way a prejudice to the defendant beyond the articles that we're talking specifically about the facts of this case. A congresswoman's opinion really doesn't matter a whole lot.
All right, Ursula, let me start off with very clear words that I want to say. Maxine Waters, why'd you say that? Why would you come out and say, we've got to get more confrontational? Just months removed from the president of the United States inciting violence January 6th. And you do this? Maxine, this is dangerous. Absolutely dangerous, and you know better than this. There's nothing positive in what you did. As a matter of fact, you have now put the spotlight on you, and now there's somebody that listens to your words,
potentially will go out there and cause harm to someone else because you wanted to sit there and say, go out there and be confrontational. You're a bad example. That was a bad example in that time. And I hope you get on here and tell the people, don't try to shy away from it. Just come out and say, I messed up. That was wrong. My words were wrong. Don't try to say, well, I wasn't trying to be this way. Don't try to sugarcoat it.
That's exactly what she's saying, though, right now.
Now,
so she said, and you said it perfectly, but she is saying right now that she didn't mean physically confrontational. She meant don't be going away quietly. So peacefully protest, but make your voices loud. But that's not how it came across.
You know my saying, and you know I'm going to use it, and this is the time to use it. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's rain. And that's exactly what she's doing. Now, one last point I want to make. For all of you right now that is talking about Maxine Waters, if you had nothing to say about Donald Trump, I need you to sit this one out. You see, that's the problem in our country. People decide who to speak out against based on your politics. That ain't how I do it. Because right is right and wrong is wrong.
Right.
And Maxine Waters is wrong. The same way Donald was wrong when he incited that violence on January 6th. You can't have it both ways. So if you're saying Maxine Waters is wrong and you were silent on January 6th, then that's a problem. But again, I don't even want to talk about January 6th. I want to talk about this and continue to talk about this. Ursula, I have no idea why Maxine Waters would do this. This is ridiculous.
To some degree, she was pandering to the people who were out there in California. And then, and there is supposed to be, what was she doing out there? And it did sound like she was trying to get him charged up, that you could already hear the crowd in the background. There were already people ready for an outcome that they don't like. And then what? I mean, in any sort of violence or looting or fire set, we can't do it again. And these calls are these threats of, oh, it's going to be another long, hot summer.
That was terrible.
We need to be calm.
Yeah.
We need to say, manage your expectations.
Yeah.
What happens, justice will be served one way or another. It really will, but it's not going to happen by getting people worked up, causing people to attack other people or cause destruction to businesses, many black-owned businesses that end up getting hurt, and that they were hurt last summer.
I'm looking forward to the talking heads out there in the media across the country that's going to lead off by talking Maxine Waters, but we're silent on Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's been happening. I just want to bring up Steve Scalise's comments one more time.
She was trying to incite violence, and in fact, there is violence going on right now in Minnesota because of her actions.
So Steve Scalise is sure that there are violent actions happening right now because of Maxine Waters, a congresswoman from California, that people heard her voice and said, you know what, Maxine told me to get confrontational, so I'm going to do this. And yet nothing was said when President Trump had a rally moments before what happened on January 6th. But again, I don't think we should go there. I think we should just call out when it's wrong. It's wrong. And I think in this case, Maxine Waters was wrong.
Can I, real quick, I got one last thing. I didn't plan on saying this, but Ursula, you and I, sometimes we get to talking and something just comes over
in your head.
It does. I want to say this about Maxine Waters. I don't think this is just going to be a one-time thing with her.
She's been very vocal.
What I mean by that is this. Think about it, y'all. We all got that one person in our family that you like, oh, yeah, that's family, but boy, they just, And sometimes, or that person in the company that, needs to step down because the way they do things ain't too kosher today. Maxine Waters, in my opinion, the way I feel about Maxine, I think Maxine should go ahead and retire. I've been feeling that way, and this right here just kind of make me want to say it. Like, you can say either she did know what she was doing by saying that, or she didn't know what she was doing by saying that.
Well, just a
either
few days
way,
ago, some people were praising her because she told she was defending Dr. Fauci during testimony and told, I can't remember who it was, but told him to basically shut his mouth. And so, you know, some people were cool with that. Hey, we like it when she's that vocal. But you know what? Call it out when something you absolutely, and I think it's a mistake for Nancy Pelosi not to say anything either. Call it out and just say, you know what? I can see how that would be taken as a call to action to be confrontational. And that's not what we mean. What we mean is peaceful protest, but make sure that your voices are heard. Okay, well, you did bring up the riot in the Capitol. And so Washington, D.C.'s chief medical examiner has now ruled that Officer Brian Sicknick suffered from two strokes and died of natural causes that day or the day after that he confronted the rioters at the January 6th insurrection. So there are apparently no evidence of any internal or external injuries. And this may actually make it much harder now to get a murder conviction because the, you know, going narrative was that Sicknick was killed by the rioters, that he'd been struck with a fire extinguisher. And then now there's no evidence of blunt force trauma. So what exactly happened?
Right. Well, the question would be, and this is the tough part, right, as far as the tragedy of him dying that day, Officer Sicknick, would he have died that day had he had a normal day at the office?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Had there not been some type of stress, in which we know that there were, had he not been hit with a fire extinguisher?
Yeah, so and they're not ruling that out, but this does away because now this autopsy said there was no evidence of internal or external injuries.
Right.
So if it's of natural causes, it's going to be hard to prove that it was his death was caused by the attack by the rioters. He was attacked, but there was no strong evidence of that.
Here's what I'm not going to do, Ursula. I am not going to argue with the medical examiner on this. So I just want to say, I'm not saying that I don't believe the medical examiner because I have no choice but to believe the medical examiner. And obviously the medical examiner knows and has seen something in Officer Sicknick to make him believe that he died of natural causes in these two strokes. Now, why those strokes happen, that's the thing that's in question. But as far as why he died, I'm going to go ahead and agree with the medical examiner. Now, let me just say this. I want to bring this. I know this has nothing to do with it, but I want to bring it up. The same way I'm going to agree with the medical examiner in this case, I'm going to agree with the medical examiner in the Manny Ellis case that happened here in the state of Washington down in Tacoma. I'm going to agree with that medical examiner, too, when he ruled his death murder.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, that's the evidence that we have. The autopsy is in the case of, let's go back to Sicknick, though.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that this results in some kind of peace for family. I mean, obviously, he is no longer alive, and his last moments on Earth were awful. But maybe knowing that it wasn't this attack that caused his death, that might bring some peace to the family. But the other part is, so then what? You know, what happens to the case of the people who've been arrested in that attack? So obviously they're going to be facing lesser charges and a much more difficult case for the prosecutors.
Sure.
Okay, we've only got a couple more minutes. I want to bring this up because I was going to bring it up during Top 5. So this is a guy who's only been with the Seahawks for a week, but already defensive end Alden Smith is now accused of assault. The 31-year-old is wanted in Louisiana for second-degree battery. Police say he's accused of attacking an acquaintance outside a business last Saturday just outside of New Orleans. And as we had mentioned when we first talked about him, he's had off-the-field troubles in the past. He played last season with the Dallas Cowboys after he was suspended the previous four seasons and then reinstated by the NFL. When you read about this, what was your first thought?
Shocker.
You weren't a big fan of him being no, picked up.
I wasn't. As a matter of fact, I have held back. See, what I try to do is I'm going to try to hold back my negativity on player acquisitions because who knows? Maybe the Seahawks saw something in Aldon Smith that's not obvious to us. That's not obvious to me, right? Like maybe what I have read and what I know about Aldon Smith, maybe I'm wrong. So when he was picked up by the Seahawks, I guess we had Stacey Joe on the show, and I said on the scale of 1 to 10, my excitement of the Seahawks picking up Aldon Smith was a 1. Remember? I said mm-hmm. that. That was my excitement. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, shows out the proven. So where's my excitement? It's still the same. It's still at a 1. Why? Because of what his past has shown us.
Yeah.
He's literally done this.
He's given another opportunity, and he still, you know, is accused, but it looks like still can't stay out of trouble.
No. And that's the thing, Ursula. This whole thing of players and being in, it starts from junior high, or if they're good, they just let it go. Let these off-the-field behaviors go because they can play, and they can play. Well, we'll see how that happens going forward with Aldon Smith. Still ahead, we have a guest on the show. The Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Rakedow, will join us to tell us why the key factors were there for reopening schools in the state of Washington. You're listening to The G. and Ursula Show.
The G and Ursula Show, Tuesday morning edition, another beautiful day on tap for the Puget Sound region. So as of yesterday, all schools in our state had to meet the deadline to offer in-person learning for any student who wants it. So we figured this would be a good time to get an update from our state school superintendent, Chris Rakedow, who joins us on the show right now. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. So I understand that the state doesn't actually keep track of the number of people who are doing in-person learning, but from what you can tell so far, how are we doing overall in terms of all schools trying to meet this deadline?
Good. We do have a monitoring report that we update every single week. Districts submit their data. As you know, there's two stories here. There's the volume of districts, right? We have 295 school districts. But 30 of them have half of all of our students. So of the 265 who have the other half of students, they tend to be small and rural. They've been open for quite some time, elementary to high school. And so we see really good numbers there and very high percentages. It's the Central Puget Sound District, some of the larger ones that are just now getting to their high school students in the last week or two. We now have all of them with a good plan, but it's been very different east versus west.
And you bring that up, and I read something in the Seattle Times, an analysis that you actually gave a quote for, but it was really interesting. And what the Times found is that school districts that primarily serve white children and districts in counties where a majority voted for Donald Trump last year, they reopened to more students sooner than the more liberal-leaning or racially diverse communities. Did that at all come as a surprise to you?
It did not. Maybe 2 years ago, if somebody had told me we're going to have a global pandemic and this would be the trend, I would have said, well, I want to wait and see it. But the moment this became a reality last January, February, and March, the political rhetoric around this from Washington, D.C. to folks in our state very much reflected the political cultural divide. At first, it was a hoax. And, you know, at first, it was just going to go away right away. And it was, you know, masks were a violation of individual liberties. Like, there was lots of ideology around this, and you began to see the pattern establish on who was going to take more risk around this and who was going to take a more scientific approach. And sadly, we've seen those numbers bear out in terms of cases, hospitalizations, and mortality rates.
Chris, there's obviously the reopening and what's gone on due to the COVID has taken place and schools have reopened late. As we get ready to go into next school year, what are some of the plans that are already in place to, if you will, make up for what has been missed this past school year?
Yeah, you know, we use really specific language around that, and we mostly talk about recovery and acceleration because we, for most of our students, we have a lot of time to figure out assessments on academic learning, but also their social, emotional, and mental health. That's becoming more important, I think. If you can't really support students and make them feel confident in their return to school and their relationships and rebuild those, then the academics won't follow. That's an important order to get right. So already there's lots of federal dollars pouring in. We see districts planning summer camps and summer recovery. We've got grants going to community-based organizations to help with families who need additional supports this summer. And then you've got school districts all submitting plans to us by June 1 to tell us, what are you going to do with that state and federal money to really develop academic recovery and acceleration and assess your students' mental health? I feel really good about those plans. We should all be a little nervous for juniors and seniors because they don't have as much time to recover, especially our seniors. So we've got some options for them. And higher ed is going to just do a great job continuing to be flexible about admissions. But for most students, they're going to have a lot of recovery time. And this isn't going to be overnight. This is going to be a multi-year strategy. And thankfully, our federal aid dollars coming. We have about 2.5 years to spend those dollars and pace ourselves.
Let's go back to what you just said about options. And you said something about, the worst part will be for juniors and seniors. And you said you have options for some of them. Can you talk about the options?
Yeah, our legislature just passed some legislation to give particular seniors and to some degree our juniors some flexibility in credits. They can't waive what we call core credits. I don't like that phrase, but you can think of that as math, science, English, language, arts, social studies, and a few others. They can't waive those, but they get to waive some other credits so that if, you know, this was a really difficult time for them and they just had to make hard choices and narrow in on fewer classes, that's going to be okay. We see a lot of students getting what are called no credits or incompletes. We didn't see our S really grow statewide. We saw this no credit assignment, which means districts said, this is a student who's struggling. They're going to need additional support here. But we see that they've got competency in that subject. They're going to be okay, but we need some time with them. That's where you're seeing that happen now. They're returning students to classrooms now, and they're really focusing on the students. Or even this summer, some of those students are going to catch up and grab credit to graduate on time.
There is a study on learning loss, and it finds that just even a couple of weeks away from school can affect students' academics. And in some districts here in our state, there were students who were away from classrooms for more than a year. You've talked about some of that learning loss and things in place. What can happen? I know that there was a comment that from the State Teachers Union about, well, who's behind because, you know, everyone's behind, but that's not the truth. There are some districts that fared better. There are some districts that have now reopened, but really are more, I don't want to say doing smoke and mirrors, but I think some parents are really dissatisfied with the amount of in-person learning that's going to happen with what little is left of the school year. How will you even out the playing field, so to speak, for these students who are in these districts that haven't fared so well?
This is where that individual assessment in the classroom becomes really important. We've got an expectation and a requirement that districts are going to do those assessments. There is such a diverse approach to this last year. There are students who have done exceedingly well by being in person. We see that in lots of rural parts of our state. There are students who did very well because they were engaged remotely. They got synchronous learning, and even though it was at a distance, it was high-quality instruction. Where I think we're really concerned is the student who was very disconnected. Maybe they had the technology even, but just did not feel connected. We saw their absentee rate go up and their academics struggle a lot. That's who districts will focus on a great deal. I know the return has got some folks saying it's not enough in person. I would just be super careful with that because for many of those districts, they're maintaining a full remote synchronous learning model. In other words, mornings or afternoons, those same students are still very much engaged one-to-one with learning. We had a plan to test this very question you've asked. We had a great plan to do a 50,000-student survey, partnered with the University of Washington. We pitched it to the federal government to say, if you want a state that's going to tell you exactly how learning was impacted by how they learn, their modality, their geography, race, gender, you name it, we can do this. And they said no. I mean, essentially, they said, we want you to test as many students as you can with as much volume as you can, even if the data won't be accurate, they didn't want our better sampling method. So unfortunately, we're kicking this back to locals, and they're going to assess in the classrooms and build their plans. But unfortunately, we don't have a good statewide model because the federal government was not interested in the accuracy of our results, just volumes of testing.
This is the voice of the superintendent of public instruction for the state of Washington, Chris Rakedow, as he joins the Gene Ursula Show. Chris, this is personal right here, this question, and it has to do with my 17-year-old senior. Now, in this case, my son is actually thriving during this pandemic. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, like, he's been doing better than he's ever done before. So what I'm saying is my son is fine. Now, let's go the opposite of that. There are some that are listening out there that their child is struggling, and some of them would like to have a redo, considering we really are in the midst of a global pandemic, and we know how serious that it has been. So my question is really simple. If I'm a parent that wants to redo this previous year, why is it so hard for us to be able to do that?
You can. It really shouldn't be, and it isn't by law. We can serve students' basic education supports all the way to age 21. And so families can engage their building leaders, their principals, and say, my kid really struggled, and I have an expectation that they're going to stay and get additional support, either direct for another year or a semester, or maybe it's remote, whatever works best for families. There's such a stigma on it, though. There's so many kids in high school who by then, if you hold them back, there is such a profound stigma that they generally drop out instead of staying engaged because of the ridicule, I guess, that comes with that. We hold kids back a lot in early grades due to literacy. We want them to be caught up. But boy, that gets really, really rare by high school. But we can do it. The money flows, the supports are there. We can do it.
Okay, I just want to make sure that this is clear in what you're saying. I understand the stigma may be attached to it in the past, but we all know that this is a little bit different. And the reasons why mm-hmm. to someone might want to repeat the reasons might be different today. So are you saying that it is easy for a parent to go in and say, hey, my child had a rough year and he needs to repeat this year? You're saying it's not hard for that parent to do that?
Well, I won't put the value of easy or hard because you're still going to navigate the system of your local school, but you absolutely have the legal right to. The basic education funds will flow. It is a legal right that families have. In fact, if they repeat a class, for example, and get a better grade, we replace the higher grade on their GPA calculation. Now, higher ed has us continue to show that they took the class twice. That'll be on the transcript, but we actually make an adjustment to the GPA when they make an improvement in that class. So all of the systems are in place. But parents have to be really strong advocates for their kids and make that insistence, provided they didn't get a diploma. If they get issued a diploma, they cannot come back and repeat. But as long as they don't get issued that diploma, they've got options.
State Superintendent Chris Rakedow, we appreciate you joining us. Always have so much more we want to talk about, so we're just going to bring you onto the show again soon. Thank you.
That sounds great. Thanks a lot.
Coming up next in scenarios, we do that, and also I make a correction for what I said earlier on the show. It's the Gene Ursula Show. It is the Gene Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday, y'all. Coming up at 11:06 in Agree to Disagree. There's a new anti-obesity drug that curbs hunger. Question, would you take it? We do that at Agree to Disagree next. But before we get to scenarios, Ursula, I want to make a correction on something that I said in the 10 o'clock hour. And what I said was, and I want to really correct it by saying I misspoke. I said that the medical examiner in the Manny Ellis case, I said that he ruled it as murder.
Yes.
That was wrong.
Homicide.
It was ruled homicide.
Yes.
So I wanted to correct that and make sure I get that
Thank
correction
you.
Out there.
Thank
All right.
you.
Let's get to scenarios brought to you by Farrah.com.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
First of all, Ursula, I wanted to save this one for Friday because this one, I believe, is a good one.
Oh, okay.
A friend of mine has been trying to get me interested in a guy. She thinks we'd be great together. She was kind of overselling him, and my experience is that no guy is ever as good as the description. So I've resisted.
Then she arranged to meet me for coffee yesterday. And coincidentally, he just happened to be there. And he's awesome. He's cute. He's funny. He's considerate. I loved everything about him. And then he asked me out again, which is awesome. Our first date was fantastic. I'm so taken with this guy. I've actually started dreaming of marrying him. Don't make fun of me. Our second date was perfect until it got real. He actually asked me if I ever wanted to have kids. I thought, wow, this is it. He feels the same way that I do. I told him that I wanted a lot of kids. I want a big family. He said, so do I. I do too. And that he loves kids. And then he told me how excited he was to meet his first baby when it arrives in June. Wait, what? What? Then he told me his ex-girlfriend is pregnant, and he said he was afraid to tell me because he didn't want to scare me away. Huh, now I'm a mess. I just keep thinking about how complicated this is going to be. I'm thinking about telling him we should take a break and to call me in 6 months and if he's still interested. What should I do? Should I run away from the man of my dreams or give him a chance to work it out? 98973 is the State Roof and Text line. Ursula, good luck. You're up to bat first.
If this is the man of her dreams and he has a baby on the way with someone else who he met before she was ever in the picture, you absolutely should continue to give him a chance. But you would also have to know that, obviously, the baby and the baby's mom will always be in your life. And you have to be at peace with that. Now, that can be tricky, but it can also work really well. Case in point, Tom Brady.
Oh,
and
well
Giselle
done.
Bündchen and Bridget Monaghan, right?
Well done. Yes. Bring some rich people into the equation. All right, Ursula. You can do it just like these really, really rich people.
Wait. Does it matter if it's a rich person?
Yes.
I mean, is the bigger issue that he's going to have? I mean, there is a financial responsibility. You're right. But you didn't tell me anything about the economic factors in this case. But bottom line, if you love somebody and they're letting you know, hey, I have a child on the way with someone else who I met again before you, this is going to be part of the picture. Are you still good with it? So she just needs to decide that.
Okay. I don't mean to bring age into the equation, but in my opinion, age matters in this. Mm. Here's what I mean. I don't know how old that this gal is. If she's in her 20s, nope, you're too young. You ain't ready for this. Now, if you're in your 30s, 40s maybe, you've got some life experience up under you. Maybe you got some friends that can relate and you can get some advice from and all those things. Then go ahead and ride with it. So I don't know your age when it comes to this. But Ursula, I got to tell you.
I have to disagree with that. But anyway,
Why? Why do you disagree?
In many ways, age is a number and it's your maturity level. I know many people in their 20s who are much more mature than people I know in their mid-40s, period.
Yeah, you have outliers, no doubt about it. But the majority of people in their 20s are not more mature than people in their 40s.
Okay.
Now, let me just, I'll keep it simple with this. This is a lot to take on. My advice would be, I think you had the right idea. Go ahead, let it simmer a little bit. Maybe you guys reconnect in July after he didn't had the baby. And if things are meant to be, let it ride. But right now, pause.
So not even date him?
Nah.
Oh, boy.
Nope. Hey, coming up next, we do Agree to Disagree. You guys are listening to the G and Ursula Show.